Good afternoon. It is 1:30 p.m. on Tuesday, February the 2022, and time to convene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Toni Olson, Board President. In accordance with the Governor's Proclamation 2028-15, we are holding meetings remotely. With me this afternoon, I have Commissioner Rebecca Wolf, Vice President, Commissioner Sid Logan, Secretary, John Harlow, CEO General Manager, Ann Spangler, General Counsel, Melissa Collins, Commission and Executive Services Director, Jenny Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Board, Allison Morrison, Assistant Clerk of the Board. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please remember to mute and turn off your camera on your devices when not speaking. I will ask for questions or comments on an agenda item as each item is discussed. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes. Some questions can be answered at the meeting and others will require more time. Please indicate you would like to speak by clicking raise hand, or if joining by phone, use *9 and attendees will be called on to speak at the appropriate time. Commissioners and John, do we have any items or changes for this afternoon's agenda?
I have none.
I have none either.
John is silent, so I'm assuming silent is none. This meeting is being recorded. When addressing the board during the meeting, state and spell your name and indicate where you are from. Comments from the public is agenda item 3 this afternoon, and that is when the board will hear comments for items that are not on this afternoon's agenda. Comments will again be limited to 5 minutes. And please note for the public joining us that all motions receive an automatic silent second from the board that ensures that all discussions can be brought to the floor for the board. Well, I'll now move on to agenda item 1, which is our CEO General Manager's Briefing and Study Session. John, do we have anything this afternoon?
Yeah, good afternoon, commissioners. We have one item. It's our legislative update from our amazing GR team of Brenda White, Quentin Harrington, Clark McIsaac, and Kim Johnston. And I see Clark on there. Good morning, or good afternoon, Clark.
Good afternoon, John. Good afternoon, commissioners. I was prepping myself to not say good morning. I'm normally not here in the afternoon, so
right.
It's good
here.
To see you all after lunch.
Yeah. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you, commissioner. Well, hopping right into it, I like to normally, I'll be walking through the key state legislation report. If memory serves me right, I believe we're working off of page 8 from the packet, and I'll be moving forward through there. I just want to start with a process check before we dive into each of the key state bills that we'll be walking through. So today is the 23rd day of the 60-day legislative session. So it's hard to believe we are only and already 1/3 of the way through this legislative session. It's moving quick and it's moving slow at the same time. We're heading up, coming up to our first cutoff. So this Thursday is the policy committee cutoff in the House of Origin. So you'll note that the legislature set up a lot of time to really debate a lot of different bills before that first initial deadline. And then following that is pretty soon after about, I think the 7th is the next cutoff, the fiscal committee cutoff. So pretty soon here in the next week plus, we'll start seeing kind of a gear shift publicly towards a more outward facing discussion on the supplemental budgets, as well as on policy, not just at least right now, on a more public focus. There's been a lot more discussion on the policy at this point.
Clark, could you take just a moment and clarify for me at least the budget, a supplementary budget, and then there's the capital budget, and when do those windows close, or do they?
Yeah, so supplemental just means that because we're in the second year of the 2-year cycle, that we're just revisiting budgets that were passed last year. Uh-huh. So kind of more or less making amendments and revisions and tweaks where needed. And so that will be on the operating, the capital, and transportation budgets.
Okay.
And those ultimately are treated actually as bills. So they are introduced as a bill, more or less. But, you know, they ultimately are debated and negotiated as a budget, if that makes sense. So language itself is in bill form. It has a bill number, or each budget has a bill number. And then it'll kind of go through similar committee and floor processes that other bills would. And those bills or the budgets don't have to abide by the cutoffs, the deadlines, and neither do bills that actually have fiscal impacts. We've talked before about bills called NTIB, or necessary to implement the budget. Mm-hmm. And so those things can kind of move at a little bit of a different pace than perhaps bills that don't have a fiscal impact. So
thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. These bills and budgets might go right up to the deadline. Yeah. Of the 60-day session, or perhaps beforehand.
Okay, thanks.
Absolutely. And just want to note, we've talked about the $100 million utility customer budget proviso, or customer assistance budget proviso. There's no necessary updates at this point on that, but I do want to let the commission know that we and other utilities and stakeholders are working diligently on connecting with legislators and in coordination with the governor's office and commerce, as we have, frankly, throughout the last year on trying to get this through. So more work to be done, no specific updates on that, but that's not in the key state legislation report, but wanted to just touch on that real quick. So the first bill we have up, I'm sorry, did I hear a question?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. First bill that we have up is House Bill 1767. This is targeted electrification. It does have a Senate companion 5666, but I'll focus on the House bill that appears to be the vehicle at this point. And this bill has, as we discussed previously, and as you've seen in the last report with our letter of support, with some of the fine tunings and little tweaks that we had on some of our last remaining questions on this bill, continue to be in support of this bill, and it's moved through its policy committee and has moved out of its policy committee and now sits in rules. What this is, if you'll remember, rules is kind of a strange bit of an archaic sort of committee. It's kind of like a bookshelf where before you want to pull a bill to the floor and debate it for potential amendments or passage to the next chamber, you can consider a bill is in rules, almost like it's in a bookshelf. Before you go and read it, you're gonna have to pull it off the shelf and read it. And there's been no updates to 1767 at this point, so it's passed through its policy committee as is.
Thank you for your work on that. It's a great bill, I think. And I know it wasn't quick to get here for support, so.
Yeah, we were able to work with stakeholders and other folks to make sure that we had our concerns met and that it was the best bill that we could put forward and would ultimately serve the PUD and our customers well, were it to be something that passed and we implemented. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's great.
Next up is Senate Bill 5803. This is utility wildfire liability. You'll see a lot of notes and highlights in this bill summary or this bill report. I'm gonna note that even since we submitted this bill has actually been substituted through a different substitute. There is a note there that we anticipated there to be a different substitute bill that would ultimately move forward. And that was the case. In collaborating closely with the prime sponsor, other stakeholders, including agency staff and committee staff, are getting this bill, I think, in a much more positive, or it's going in a much more positive and beneficial direction. The liability issue has been removed and able to focus this bill really on a planning sort of tool. And at this point, we're awaiting, as things are moving quick, we're awaiting a little bit further review on some of the fine details. But from a high level, it looks like local control has been preserved and respected. Previously in the initial version of the bill, there was a role for the Utilities and Transportation Commission in respect to consumer-owned utilities. That issue has been resolved from the best that I can tell. But there's more work to be done. Again, this bill looks like it's moving in a very positive direction. The prime sponsor has been very collaborative and willing to amend the bill. And it's been a good, broad collaborative effort thus far.
Clark, this is Commissioner Olson. I apologize. Can we go back? I just have a quick question on HB 1767 that you just spoke of previously.
Yeah, please.
Is this, it says this would authorize municipal electric utilities and PUDs upon adoption of a targeted electrification plan. It's kind of in the last line in that top section. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that the PUD board would have to take some action to develop this plan?
To develop? That's a good question as far as initiating whether or not a plan would be developed. I'm not certain about that. What I would say is that the process is intended to be similar to the targeted electrification plan. Was that a year or two ago that the board addressed? And ultimately that this plan that would be put forward in front of the governing board, in front of this commission, were, you know, that to be a path that the PUD wanted to go, the board would have to find that there was net benefits to the utility and to the customers.
Okay. Okay, so we would have need to take some action, be it a plan or whatever.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
So the intent of that is to ensure that this is all voluntary and optional. Even if this were to pass, a PUD would not have to actually implement a targeted electrification plan. But where their interest there was the safeguard to make sure that there would be net positive benefits to the utility and customers.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And then moving on, so I think page 9 is 5803. That is just, as I noted, been passed out of its policy committee, Environment, Energy, and Technology, and will be moving on to its fiscal committee. So should be page 10. So substitute House Bill 1623. This bill is addressing the extent to which Washington residents are at risk of rolling blackouts and power supply inadequacy events. It just builds off of a process put forward under the Clean Energy Transformation Act. We had reported on this bill last time. Really, the only difference between this substitute bill that is now moving forward and the previous bill is an amendment to, or some amendments to the intent section, but not the actual substance of the bill. So the idea there was there's maybe some difference in perspectives on perhaps what kind of the narrative around this bill was, but the ultimate end result of the bill is still the same. It's still an expansion of discussion and a continuation of discussion on resource adequacy issues or potential challenges while we're looking ahead at a changing and transforming energy landscape. And this bill at this point is in the House Rules Committee. So again, that bookshelf type of committee. Looking ahead, we have Substitute House Bill 1770, Strengthening Energy Codes. There were some changes from the last version of this bill that we reported on last time in the packet. Some of these changes address one of our concerns, just trying to better understand what the role was of, I'll step back and just do a quick refresher on this bill, perhaps. So it intended to strengthen energy codes. There's already a reduction in energy consumption by, and I'm sorry, I'm going to forget the date, but a date in the future at this point. And then it added an additional reduction in energy consumption for newer buildings as well. A component of that latter reduction was also an interest in trying to prepare new homes and new buildings for perhaps rooftop solar. One of the changes in this bill just kind of took a little bit of a step back and just clarified exactly what some of that infrastructure could be. One of the biggest questions that we had about this bill was in that reduction in energy consumption, where does, say, for example, electric vehicle charging load come from? So if we're electrifying things, how does that kind of fit into this whole calculation of actually reducing energy consumption? So that issue has been resolved. It's specifically the EV consumption is not included here, just because of when and how this was set up. So some of our remaining concerns are what we pointed out before. There's this term net zero ready, which is what that latter target energy consumption reduction is. And that remains yet to be fully defined at this point. And it continues to leave it towards the State Building Code Council. So some kind of uncertainties around what this bill actually, how it could impact the PUD and our customers remain largely because of that uncertainty on that definition or on that term.
May I just ask one quick question? So the people out in the people in the workforce who would be affected would be electricians, contractors, plumbers, people like that, or just, I mean, the people who would have to follow the codes, are they like county planning departments? And I'm just trying to understand who would be affected by this other than our utility, if that's an appropriate question.
I'd say just generally kind of similar to what we see now with work around meeting building codes. So those folks who tend to engage in building code councils, like you said, like contractors, electricians, et cetera, would be just a part of the calculation, the general workforce who engage in these issues.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
And this bill at this time also sits in the House Rules Committee as well. Next bill, and now I've lost track on what page we are on, but House Bill 1814. And this is the community solar bill, more or less a continuation of the 2020 bill that passed but was vetoed by the governor just due to uncertainties due to the pandemic and its impact economically to the state. We had supported this bill in its 2020 form and it supported this bill coming out. There were a couple of technical tweaks we were looking for just around this bill. And actually just this morning, this bill was amended, incorporating some of those technical fixes and is moving ahead as well. So positive news with this bill.
Great.
And next steps, so it's been voted out of its policy committee, environment and energy, and is moving on to its fiscal committee. And last bill in this report is one that might look familiar to you. This is, let's see if I get this right, Engrossed Second Substitute House Bill 1117. So this is a 2021 bill. This is the Net Ecological Gain Bill. And just as of recent, within the last week, this bill kind of picked itself back up and has continued through the process. As bills tend to go, they're more or less retained in their last place in their house of origin. So this bill was basically in rules in the House, got pulled to the floor and was passed on and now in the Senate. If you want, I can go through a quick refresher. The net ecological gain standard of the proposal more or less replaces the no net loss standard on ecological functions for projects. There's kind of some questions that remain around what the net ecological gain, what some of the definitions are there. It adds salmon recovery to a list of goals under the Growth Management Act. And there are just various other ecological and salmon related provisions under this new standard. So again, a bill we had reported on last session, it wasn't moving in the first reporting period, but now that has changed pretty quickly. There's been no amendments to this bill since we reported in 2021. So this report essentially stands as it was when we last reported on it. But again, it has moved and has been voted out of the House and now awaits to be heard in its policy committee in the Senate. And with that, that's what I have for the key state legislation report. I'm happy to answer any questions here. And I know we have the government relations activities report as well.
Commissioners, any questions, comments?
No, thank you for the report, Clark.
Thank you. Let's now move on to agenda item two, recognition and declarations. And are we going to have a good time this afternoon? Our team of the month is Energy Control Center System Operations Team. And I'd like to introduce Paige Olson, who will introduce the Energy Control Center and System Operations Team. Paige, you're on.
It says the host has stopped my video.
Host, can you get her picture?
There we go. Thank you.
Yes. Welcome, Paige.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So good afternoon, Commissioners Olson, Wolf, and Logan, and General Manager CEO John Harlow. I am Paige Olson, Superintendent of the Energy Control Center, and I'm honored to be here today to introduce you to the ECC System Operations Team as the district's February Team of the Month. The Energy Control Center has overcome many challenges over the past 2 years with the impact that the COVID pandemic has had on our critical staffing levels due to clean teams, voluntary PDL, and retirement attrition. The team is committed to supporting each other, our field personnel, our customers, and the district while ensuring the safety of our workforce and community and providing seamless continuity of our electric system operations, reliability, and emergency restorations. I value the expertise, contributions, and personal sacrifices of each team member. System operators have had to work additional 12-hour rotating shifts with many of those shifts back-to-back to ensure continuous 24/7 coverage on site in the ECC due to reduced staffing, provide additional support for storms, and maintain NERC compliance for the transmission system. Early in the pandemic, the ECC NERC compliance team and the system operators had to quickly convert and adapt from monthly in-person meetings and instructor-led NERC-required training to a virtual instructor-led platform. Throughout the pandemic, the team has had to remain flexible and open to process changes and learn how to effectively work with support departments that are currently remote or hybrid. In addition to the long hours and extra shifts, the team has had been focused on providing system operations training to 4 new system operators and 2 apprentices. In 2021, the ECC lost 50% of our employees to retirement attrition, requiring critical positions to be filled and trained during the pandemic. So I'd like to take the opportunity to introduce our current team members. And this will be in alphabetical order. So we have Steph Carpenter, system operator. We have Billy Chen. Okay,
excuse me, Paige, it's Tony. Are they going to be on the line with us? Or?
They are. If they can have video.
If they can open up their video, that would be great.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We can encourage them to show their videos.
If they don't want to, that's great too.
Oh, we have a few.
Yay. Okay, come on, folks.
Awesome.
Let me see your mugs.
Come on, Dave and Ted.
Yeah, so as I go through the names, maybe you can like raise a quick wave or Steph Carpenter, system operator, Billy Chen, system operator, Debbie Jager, system operator, Ted Kimball, system operations training coordinator, Alan Koski, system operator, Lindley Latham, ECC operations coordinator, Shane Mahoney, System Operator Apprentice, John Mantow, System Operator, Doug Metcalf, System Operator Apprentice, Jeff Moss, System Operator, George Ott, System Operator, Jeff Reif, General Foreman, Robert Rios, ECC NERC Compliance Manager, Craig Rogas, System Operator, Ron Verberg, System Operator, Dave Wittenberger, Outage Coordinator, and Perry Williams, System Operator. So recognition of the ECC System Operations Team as February Team of the Month is well-deserved, and I am very proud of their dedication, professionalism, and perseverance through these challenging times. So thank you.
I don't know how you did it, but you did it.
Yes.
So bravo.
Yes, and we're continuing to do it. So yes,
thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And I'll just pile on to Paige's comments. This team has done an amazing job over the past few years, especially. They always do an amazing job, but obviously, as Paige articulated, very, very challenging times through COVID. And we've had even an unusual number of storms over the past year or so, and this team has just absolutely hit it out of the park. Can't be more proud of this group. Absolutely represent what PUD is all about.
Yes. Thank you, John.
I just want to say thank you for all that you do. I know that you play a key role in it with our customers getting power restored and keeping power on. And I understand you have a key function, a safety function with our field personnel, keeping them safe as we conduct operations. So thank you so much. And you're the only people I know that work in a place that looks like it's mission control.
I don't know. Do they still have a lock on the door?
It's in secure lockdown, yes.
It's Tony. I was just in reading your script. You lost 10 operators in a year?
Yes, so through a retirement.
With a turnover? Wow. Yeah.
Yes. So we're in the process of rebuilding our team and progressing forward. So doing very
it's
well.
It's tough finding those operators too. I know. This was alluded to in the your write-up page. And, you know, something struck me. We are a distribution utility, basically. And the systems and crew dispatchers are, you know, they're the heart and the backbone of the utility. However, you know, customers, they don't see you every day, so they don't get it. But the fact is that what you do or don't do and how well you do it and don't do it impacts their quality of life. So when I say I believe that you are the heart and the core of the utility, I sincerely mean it. And I also was thinking, John, with the evolution of all the new technology that I'm assuming that those folks are involved in, must be another layer of pressure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in terms of moving into the new area, we seems to always be moving in. But, you know, I was out at ops in the era when the door was locked and it was at the end of a long hall. I don't know. Is it still there?
Still
is
there.
Okay. You go on. It was very intimidating. But anyway, it's just, you know, I can say great job, but I haven't a clue of the pressures and stuff that you're going under. But I sincerely mean it when I say you're the core of this company.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Olson.
And it's my understanding that you have some new people who are being trained. They're, what's the word? Not interns, but
we have two apprentices.
Apprentices.
Yes.
So is that program going well with the?
It is.
Okay.
Yes.
Good.
Yes, we have internal candidates joined our apprenticeship program 6 months ago, so right. They're almost complete with their first step. So, and doing very well.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think as Commissioner Olson alluded to, there are pressures just beyond kind of what you typically think about for this group, and keeping the lights on and doing it to ensure the safety of the crew, safety of the public, which is obviously paramount. But the continuing changing of technology, getting them involved in how to make that technology work more effectively for them. Again, could not be more proud of this work group. And we've got some very, very talented folks in this group in it. And I think the future is extremely bright for this group. And that's what gives me great confidence to sleep well at night when I am sleeping.
This is Tony again. I just have a question. It's just a question from my past. These are the system operators. Is that also crew dispatch? Is that what you mean by that other title?
So
are the crews dispatched out of there too?
They are after hours through our ARCO system, but during the business hours, we have our crew dispatch team, which is upstairs from us.
Okay, so it's by the loading dock then.
They're actually in the same building. Yeah, just above us. So we're considered station one, and then we have crew dispatch, which is station two.
And I love it. They still call it that?
Yes.
Oh, I love it.
That's interchangeable.
John always kind of his eyes cross when I say that.
Oh. Old school.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Commissioner Olson.
Do you have any other comments, commissioners, or John?
Commissioner Olson, this is Mark Fleury. I'd just like to say a few words, if I may.
Sure.
So I'm the senior manager of engineering and operations, and I just want to echo the gratitude and all the comments that commissioners have given today. This really is an amazing team. They're all highly skilled operators. They take their job and their trade very seriously. And just, it can't be missed that every day of the year, weekends and holidays, this team reports to work at either the crack of dawn or late in the evening to safely operate our electrical system.
24/7.
And ensure that our customers are getting reliable power. So just a huge thank you to the ECC team for everything that you're doing for the district and for our customers.
Well said. Well said, Mark. Do we have any of the others with us that wanted to make a comment? Don't want to shut you out.
This is Jason. I'd just like to say congratulations to the team. And, you know, just to add on to all the comments, great job in the pandemic. I know it's been a really busy storm season, and you guys have just done a fantastic job. And I was reading through the packet last night and just seeing, you know, there's a lot of new folks in the group, and you guys just continue to keep the lights on and do an outstanding job. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Jason. Anyone else? I see some faces, but they're not turning their mics on, so I'm assuming they don't want to say anything. Great. Well, good to see your faces. Let's then now move on to agenda item 3, which is comments from the public.
Thank you.
Allison, do we have a customer in the queue that wants to address the board?
We do have a couple, and Gayla Shoemake will be up first.
All right. Good afternoon, Gayla.
Good afternoon, commissioners. As she said, I'm Gayla Shoemake, and I'm from Edmonds. First, I'd like to commend the commission in their responses to the priorities workshops last week. I thought it was very interesting, but I was especially delighted when you were insisting that there be more community involvement in the process. I look forward to the details of that. And again, I want to commend you for saying it's important to get more members of the community. And particularly, I think about the part of the community that is not computer literate. So think about how you can get to those people. And I also would like to commend the PUD's legislative team on their support of HB 1814 and HB 1767 and SB 5666 and SHB 1623. They are doing a super job. I would ask the team to look carefully for future support to that E2SHB 117, which talks about salmon support. And I know that you haven't yet taken a stand on that one, but I think for PR purposes, if no other reason, you really should support that. Because although I know you do a lot of work to support salmon, this might sound like that you're against the salmon, and I know you're not. And the other one, SBH 1770, strengthening energy codes. I think Clark said they'd make some changes in that, which now would lead to your support. So I'm watching the legislature fairly carefully, probably not quite as closely as Clark, but I'm very interested in keeping track of what's going on. So thank you, and thank you to the legislative team. Thank you, commissioners, and thank you
for the comments, Gayla. Allison?
Next up, you have the Snow Isle Sierra Club.
Welcome.
Hello.
Yes, welcome. Comments.
My name is Nancy Johnson. I'm a resident of Edmonds. And sorry, I didn't realize that my name was displaying a Snow Isle Sierra Club. But anyway, as a native Washingtonian who's lived on both sides of the Cascades, I've seen the devastating effects of climate change in our state. Just review the list: the heat dome of last summer, the floods, the fires, the droughts, and the toll those have taken on our residents, our wildlife, and our ecosystem health. As a retired nurse, I'm also alarmed about the contributions of fossil fuel emissions from buildings to the climate crisis, as well as them causing unhealthy indoor pollution. Until recently, I didn't realize that buildings are the source of almost 25% of greenhouse gas emissions in Washington and are the fastest growing source. Recent studies have shown a strong link between gas stoves and furnaces to asthma and other health problems, particularly in children and marginalized communities. That is why I was delighted to see that the PUD is supporting House Bill 1767 with the companion bill, Senate Bill 5666, the targeted electrification bill. If passed, this bill will result in a win-win situation. Targeted electrification of buildings will reduce greenhouse gas emissions from the building sector, as well as improving air quality and health within those buildings. In the documentation I reviewed, it didn't look like the PUD had actually testified in favor of the bill, and I'm wondering if that could be done. As the second largest public utility in the Northwest, your visible support could make the difference between bill passage and waiting another year. And I'd love to see you initiate an incentive program as soon as possible. In the interest of full disclosure, my gas furnace is 16 years old, and I really need to replace it with an electric heat pump, which would also provide cooling in our summers. I'd also like to commend the PUD on working with individual communities such as Edmonds to meet the goals of their 2017 resolution, committing to achieve or exceed at the local level, the goals established in the Paris Climate Accords. In addition, it's great to see the effort and creativity going into the 2040 scenario planning. I look forward to seeing more collaboration, maybe working with school districts to assist them in decarbonizing buildings and buses to create a healthier environment for our children. And I thank you very much for all you're doing and to help your customers and our planet.
Well, thank you for those good words and that input. And I look forward to hoping that someone from your organization can join us more frequently.
I think Nancy is co-chair. Is that right, Nancy?
Yes, I chair the group. Yes.
Or you chair. Okay.
Well, it is very informative for the commission, and also they can get a flavor and a sense for the work that the board is doing on these issues. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, let's, do we have anyone else?
I do not show any other hands raised.
Okay, my timer just went off. Well then let's move on to agenda item 4. Which is the consent agenda. Item A, approval of the minutes for the regular meeting January 18th, 2022, and the special meeting of January 25th, 2022. 4B, bid awards, professional services, contracts, and amendments. 4C, consideration of certification, ratification, and approval of district checks and vouchers. 4D, consideration of a resolution adopting and approving an amended and related Snohomish County Public Utility District Number 1 Health Reimbursement Arrangement Plan document. Is that not a mouthful or what? 4E, consideration of a resolution revising the non-union salary structure table and certain portions of the salary administration program. I will call for a motion.
I move approval.
Are there any comments from the public on this agenda item?
I do not see any hands raised.
All right, thank you. Commissioners, do we have any comments, questions?
I do not.
I have none.
Just give the old girl just a second to get to the one I want to get to here. No. Oh, did you hear that, anybody? My thing isn't working. I just wanted to, this isn't a question, it's just a comment. And, you know, as we read our bid contracts report, we, at the end, we get the reports on the reported contract acceptances for when work is completed. And I've noticed for a while, and I just wanted to comment on that. I marvel at how close the contract closeout amount is to the original contract amount. And, you know, that's just a good sign of how well our folks manage these, how tight they manage these contracts. And, you know, some contractors can get change order happy, but I think the management is very tight and is good for the bottom line. So just an observation. Now we have no questions on any of the agenda items A through D, commissioners.
I have no comments.
Forgot E. All right. We ask for comments from the public. I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes 3-0. We will now move on to agenda item 5, to our public hearings, agenda item 5A, 2022 through 2026 water retail rate study public hearing. I will now convene a public hearing on the 2022 through 2026 water retail rate study public hearing. A little repetitive there. I'll introduce Brent Wood, who will facilitate the presentation and discussion. Brent, are you there? There you are.
I am. Good afternoon, commissioners. Just waiting for the screen to come up. So I'll take a little bit of the lead from the commissioners. We've talked about this. We talked about it at the December 7th meeting, and we talked about it at the January 18th meeting. So it's a rather long presentation, so I can go as quickly or as thoroughly or slowly as the board would like, but I'll start through it. And if you feel I'm going too slow, please egg me on. Or if Brent, I'm going too fast, let me know that too.
Okay. Oh, well, you know, I'm bossy. I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
Before you start, I just want to say, I think this is a beautifully done PowerPoint.
Thank you very much. That's more to ask Christina and others than myself.
Let me just ask really quickly, because this is, as Brent said, this is a long presentation, but it is material that has been covered previously. Mm-hmm. So I want to make sure the board is aware this will be all be information that you have seen. Mm-hmm. So I think I want to ask straight out, do you want us to go or want Brent to go through the presentation?
I think it would be good because we have some people from the public who are on the call today.
I mean, you know, we often ask members of the public that are present if they would like to see the presentation. Okay. They may have already seen it too. So,
yeah, I don't know.
Well, Allison, do you have any indication? Do we have anyone still on the line? Allison, where did you go?
I do not show any hands raised currently. Okay.
Oh, excuse me. I don't think they would raise their hand, but that doesn't mean that they wouldn't like to know about this.
So, I'm happy to go through the presentation, and I can go as fast or as slow as the board would like me to.
Well, maybe you could ask for them to raise their hand if they want to hear it, and if there are no hands, then skip it.
Do we have any one on the line or on the Zoom application that would like to hear this presentation? please raise the hand sign.
I do not show any raised
hand. Okay, okay. Commissioners, my only, and I may be wrong, but when I study my agenda, I went back to the last briefing, Brent, and I thought there were some different numbers, that one to this one. Am I not reading correctly? And please, I should have written down the differences because I went through the last one and now we have this one. Are there any changes?
No, it's the same. It's the same overall with the cost of service analysis at the end. But maybe I could at least go through some of the really quickly some of the basic slides where I skip over, and then go to the end, which is really talking about the summary findings, the revenue requirement, and
that's probably kind of the most
recommending.
Yeah, I think that's probably the most important because you have covered the work that you and the consultant have done.
Yeah.
Previously, so.
I'll just do a really quick overview, we can. So again, at the December 7th meeting, we talked a lot about the background, the system overview, the drivers impacting water rates, the overview of the rate study process, some of the key assumptions. And some of those key assumptions we talked again at the January 18th meeting. So we made sure that the end of year 2021 cash balance was in the model. We looked at holding a slightly higher cash on hand balance for the next 3 years, 108 days rather than 90 days, just because of the risks that we're seeing, just like the electric utility is seeing in the economy, potential inflation loss, rate increases, just material cost increases. So I'm gonna try to go through. Let's see that page now. So this just talked about the 2017 study. I'll keep going.
Yeah, we've had a lot of this. Why don't you move to just tell us which slide you want to start with here.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
we'll move to that one.
Okay. It doesn't want to keep going for me here. There it goes. So just really quick, we'll touch on some of the rate drivers. Just again, continued increase in purchased water from City of Everett, continued emphasis, which is a positive, on our main replacement program, meter reading costs, our shared services costs of the electric utility.
So, I have a question on slide 12, please.
Let's go back to
what is, and I'm sorry if it's in here and I missed it, but what is our monthly cost for meter reading in actual dollars?
So our monthly cost in meter reading is split between our cost from TrueCheck and our cost from our meter readers. So on average, it's where we spend, last year we spent, in TrueCheck was $142,000 a year, so roughly $12,000 a month for TrueCheck. And our cost for district meter reading was approximately $300,000, so approximately $25 a month, or $25,000 a month. So on average, we spend about $37,000 a month on meter reading.
Okay, thank you.
Keep in mind, just for reference, that's water only.
That's not correct.
All meter reading. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, that's water share for meter reading. Again, point out on the Everett cost increases. You know, Everett has had several rate increases over the last few years. If you look at just what their rate increases were the last few years, it could potentially justify a 3.11% rate increase just in Everett's rate increases. Continued cost in, you know, our cost for replacing the old infrastructure continues to increase. I've already seen that slide. We talked about it. We try to continue to maximize the use of our Lake Stevens wells to minimize the impact for Everett's rate. So the more water we can produce, the less water we have to purchase directly from City of Everett, and the more we can save our customers.
Sorry, Brent, but I had two other questions. I think these will be really quick, but on slide number 12, I was wondering about the costs incurred by electric. What are those, and about how much are those?
So actually, this slide represents that shared services.
Oh, impact. Okay.
And it's a little bit, the way it's worded is a little bit, it can be looked at both ways, but it's really the cost that the water shares in those services that are provided by the electric utility. So we actually share in the cost for the board, and general accounting and legal and contracts and purchasing and HR and payroll and customer service, customer accounting, meter reading, corp comm, you know, all of the parts of the electric utility or the PUD support both the electric and the water, and we have to pay our fair share. And those costs have gone up. I mean, so finance, you know, it's finance's job to make sure that the water utility is paying their fair share of the cost of those shared services. And
is there an approximate percentage of that, what our fair share is in water?
Yeah, it's calculated differently. Like I said, the meter reading is calculated on about a 6% share. If you look at what our costs just from a dollar perspective, our costs for all shared services except for IT, you know, back in 2019 it was around $743,000. Moving into the 22 budget, it's about $1.6 million. IT has gone from about $376,000. And this includes the hardware, the licenses, the support has gone in 2019, it was around $376,000 to about $859,000 in the 2022 budget moving forward. So just those costs have just increased. And as they've increased, the water utility shares a portion of those, roughly 6%. And I mean, if you had to pick a number, about 6%.
Okay, that's really what I was interested in. Thank you so much. And my final question, wait just one second. Wait just a minute, one more. Oh, on water treatment, if we didn't have the water treatment done by the Lake Stevens processes, what are the other options? Not that we would want them, but just wondering.
So again, about 75% of the water that we serve to our Lake Stevens customers is purchased directly from the city of Everett. So most of the water we serve is purchased from the city of Everett. Roughly 25% can be produced in our Lake Stevens wells. So about 25% is produced in our Lake Stevens wells. About 75% is purchased wholesale from City of Everett. So the more that we can do to maximize the amount of water that we produce and treat ourselves, the more we can kind of constrain the cost increases that we've received from City of Everett.
And so everything that comes from Everett is already treated, obviously, right?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Sorry to burden you with those, but...
No, I'm sorry. I'm trying to bounce around. Hopefully it's making sense with bouncing around. So if you remember just the overview of the rate setting process, you know, the first step is really that revenue requirement, determining, you know, how much overall we need to support, you know, debt, O&M, capital, and still keep the reserves. Then we went in and talked about the cost of service, where we looked at the different customer classes and kind of allocate costs between those customer classes. And then the third step is the rate design. So if you'd like to get in more detail, we can definitely do that, but I'm gonna kind of go really quick through the overall revenue requirement. So a lot of key assumptions associated with the revenue requirement, customer growth, which is consistent with what, you know, we talked about on December 7th, all this is. I'm going to kind of bounce through this. Some of the fiscal targets, again, that 90 days cash, O&M, the Water System Revenue Fund, debt service coverage, maintaining a target of 1.75. That's what was used in the financial model to kind of look at our revenue needs moving forward in the future. We did say that for the next 3 years and at the just January 18th meeting that we would like to hold that cash on hand a little bit higher the next 3 years, just to make sure that we have a little bit of resiliency and some of the risks that we're kind of seeing right now, kind of an unstable time right now. just kind of jump through this. So overall, what we talked about at the last meeting was, when you kind of split it out, we're looking at roughly a 1.75% overall proposed rate increase for 2022. Now, even though we show, and I just want to make this really clear, even though we're showing the forecast, the best guess for 2023 through 2026, when we come to the board, all we're really looking for right now is 2022. As we move forward into 2023 and each year forward, we'll come back to the board, see where we ended up, see where our cash ended up at the end of the year, see what our capital projects ended up at the end of the year, and kind of revisit the requirements moving forward. So cost of service, again, I'm going to go really quick through this. We already went through it, but just getting down to the kind of the bottom line here is that the single family, which is about 90% of our customer base, is single family, in that range, 91% of our revenue is single family. They are overpaying slightly. The percentage multifamily and commercial are underpaying, and we've looked at it as multifamily and commercial. We don't want to go above 4%, but to get that overall rate increase of 1.7%, the single family would see about a 1.53% rate increase. Multifamily and commercial would see about a 4%. Commissioner Olson, to answer your question, this might be the slide that caused you a little bit of what did something change. I think in the last one we said 1.5 overall. We had it to, instead of three, instead of the hundredth of a decimal, we only had it to the tenth of a decimal. But to balance out that four, which we didn't want to go above that for the commercial and multifamily, it would be about for the single family about a 1.53% rate increase, and about a 1.96 moving forward once we get into the. But again, all we're really talking about here is 2022. So you boil all that down into the overall rate design, again, we've gone through, and probably the consultant, Sergey, is like pulling his hair out, seeing how I'm butchering this presentation, but I'm trying to go quickly.
So I'm sorry, Brant, my intent was not to slight the importance of this. You've done a good job in previous presentations with us, so.
No, I am very thankful, actually. So.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying not to butcher it too bad. I'm trying to. So as we get into the rate design considerations, again, we talked about that cost of service. We talked about how the single family were paying more than their fair share. So that if we're looking at a total need of 1.75% revenue increase, that if we incorporate that cost of service phase in, for the next few years, we think that makes sense to do that. We think it makes sense to, it'll help balance in the next few years to help balance what the single family customers are funding versus what the commercial and what the multifamily customers fund. So the final recommendation was moving forward for 2022, a rate increase that would incorporate for the single family that 1.53% increase. So for a typical single family home using the 100 cubic feet or per 100 cubic feet, using about seven, or this is actually, sorry, this is the proposed rate. So right now our rates are split between monthly customer service charge and the commodity rate. So the fixed portion and the commodity rate, that 1.53% is split evenly. So when it says across the board, what that means is we've taken that 1.53% and we've applied it to both the monthly customer charge and the commodity rate. So you'll see that our rate increase for the monthly customer charge went from $22.98 to $23.33. Commodity rate went from $3.52 to $3.57 per 100 cubic feet. Multifamily, commercial, and Lake Connor Park, which is Lake Connor Park is actually, it's a different kind of customer. It's northeast of Lake Stevens. They have they're a RV recreational facility that has about 1,600 lots that can be purchased. And then the actual Lake Connor Park purchases water directly from the PUD and they sell it to the owners of their lots, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So it is a little bit different animal. Mm-hmm. And then this is what I was actually thinking, the sample rate impact. So if you look at 2022, again, 2023 through 2026, forecast at rates, but what we're really looking at is, you know, making the change to 2022. So the average user that uses about 700 cubic feet per month, their bill would go by about 70 cents per month. Multifamily customers, based on that 4% increase overall, and a multifamily is any customer that has two or more connections. So like a duplex up to like an apartment complex with a single meter. They would see like a low user might be a duplex. You know, the overall bill might go up by $2.22. So, you know, again, there'd be two families paying that bill. So kind of like the single family home, you know, they would see about a 1.53%. That duplex user would see about a 2%, a little bit more, but not, it's not like there's 4% per family. It's just the bill would be about 4% higher, which would be about $2.22 for kind of a low user, $3.52 for kind of an average user in that class. And the high user would see about $6. And then looking at the commercial, again, we tried to look at the average user of our commercial customers, the higher users, and the low users, and what the impacts of these bills or this increase would be. If you take that and look at the typical PUD single family home customer, you'll see that we've looked at other utilities in the area, the region. We really have held our rates constant for, well, since 2018. We used to be kind of on the higher side. We used to be higher, kind of 3/4 range. You can see that we've kind of dropped back. We're kind of in the lower part. This rate increase really doesn't change places with anyone. It just would jump us above ourselves basically a little bit. So we don't actually even swap places with anyone moving forward. So again, the recommendation is for an overall rate increase of 1.75% for our retail customers. Go ahead and continue the cost of service phase in. So again, that's for our single family customers, 1.53% rate increase. For our commercial and multifamily, 4%. We'll revisit the connection charges and wholesale rates in 2022, and then revisit conservation rates at a future date. I think it might be appropriate to have, I think we talked about this at several of the past meetings. You know, once we have the AMI in process or going and working, it'll really give us kind of an idea of how potentially conservation works rates could work. And it also will send those signals to the customers a little bit better. So just through AMI, we may be able to send the customers the right signal so that we don't even need a conservation rate. They'll be able to see on a daily basis how much water they're using and kind of readjust as needed. So thinking we will revisit that, we'll bring that back to the board, but you know, maybe after we have the AMI project kind of up and running, so we at least have some good background. So again, after that, if you're still willing and if you still support a rate increase, what we do is we come back to the board at the February 15th meeting with a resolution authorizing the 2022 only water utility retail rate increase. And those rates would then take effect April 1. If I didn't butcher that too bad, do you have any questions?
You did a very good job, Brent. Very good. And like many of our, you know, the major issues that the board staff does a really good job of taking a step by step. And that's why we have multiple briefings where you kind of build on one and one and one. So I very much appreciate that. Commissioners, do we have any questions of Brent? And I guess I should check with Allison with regard to the public. Any hands raised?
I I do not show any hands raised.
All right. Commissioners?
I have no more. I had some, but they're answered. Thank you.
No, just a comment. You know, when we started this process, we were looking at a higher rate increase. And so I really appreciate Brant and his folks going back and taking a hard look at it. And so thank you for all you put into this. I know it's a lot of work.
And I commend you, Commissioner, for kind of taking the lead on that and bringing to our attention some of those issues. And I appreciate that. Let's see. Hearing no further comments or questions, I will now call for a motion to continue the public hearing on the proposed water retail rates.
I move the public hearing on the proposed 2022-2026 water retail rates be continued to Tuesday, February 15th, 2022 at 1:30 p.m. at 2320 California Street in Everett, or at a publicly noticed video conference if appropriate.
Thank you. I will now call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes 3-0. We will now move on to agenda item commission reports. Item A or commission reports. Do we have any reports, commissioners?
Commissioner Olson, I think we skipped item six, president, general manager report.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. I didn't turn the page. Yes, general manager report, John.
I'm not going to let John get off so easy.
Yeah,
sorry about that.
I thought I was going to get a break today.
I flipped my script too early.
No worries at all. First off, just a huge kudos to Brant and his him going through the water rate cost of service presentation. He's done a lot of work and heavy lifting on that whole project, he and Christina and the entire team. So phenomenal job. Just a couple quick updates to share. First, from our finance group, just a quick update on 2021. Many folks in the finance division are working to finish up the year-end work for 2021 and prepare the annual audit. We expect to have some firm numbers by mid-February and plan to share more information in the commission package for the February 15th meeting. The accounting and finance groups will be busy with year-end and audit work for the next couple of months and will be issuing the annual report and final audit reports in late April to early May. In our HR group, just a COVID update, the district COVID testing program began voluntary testing the week of January 24th for employees not previously subject to testing. Since January 1st, the district has had 85 positive COVID cases and 120 close contact cases, referred to the contact tracing team. 9 of the positive cases were identified when employees who did not have symptoms took a COVID test as part of our on-site testing program. This is a significant safety benefit to all our employees and reduces the potential for in the work environment spread. Also, the district is transitioning our COVID check-in stations in each building to sanitation-only stations. Employers will no longer be required to use an app to check in or need wristbands. The sanitation stations will continue to provide masks, thermometers, hand sanitizers, and disinfecting wipes. And then lastly, from our generation group, and this is breaking news, I just received this from Jason Zaskowski a few minutes ago. Yesterday, the generation team received delivery of the new Qualco generator, and they have now begun the assembly process. The team will be focused on the assembly over the next month with a startup target for this spring. And the team is super excited to be putting that in place and getting it ready to go. And that's it. Open for any questions or comments.
I'm happy that the Qualco equipment has arrived. I know it was iffy.
Questionable, yeah.
Yeah.
Any further questions, commissioners?
I have none.
Okay, well, we're now moving on to commission business, agenda item 77A, commission reports. Commissioners, do we have any reports?
You know, I just wanted to say that I think we all attended the last large customer breakfast and how much I enjoyed it. I thought it was well done. And
I'm very well.
Glad that we're talking about Connect Up with our large customers.
Those are very well attended too. Far more than when you actually have the breakfast in person. So well attended.
Yeah. There's just no breakfast in the breakfast.
Yeah, I know. That's the disappointing part.
Maybe have to change the names, but I think that is one of the venues where we've actually seen the positive side of COVID.
Greater participation.
Yeah.
Greater participation. All right. Let's move on. Let's move on to our events calendar. Commissioners, do we have any changes to our events calendar? I don't see a lot on it. No changes?
I have none.
Commissioners, I need to tell you that I may disappear here because the software center from Arthur PUD says my computer is going to shut down.
Yeah, mine said that too.
Can you make it go away?
Yeah, I was afraid to hit snooze.
You could just snooze it for now and I can call you.
Oh, we can snooze it?
Correct.
No,
mine won't even let me snooze. Sorry, I'm off topic, but so if I go away, it was nothing I did.
Oh, like you both go away and I'll be alone.
I know it. Well, maybe you'll get something done. Sorry, that was being a smart aleck.
Yeah, I was really worried about it too, because I thought, okay, what am I going to do if it shuts down?
Well, but if we hit restart, then what? We'll still go away.
I didn't want to restart. But yeah. I did notice that there was kind of a timeline and it looked as if we still had quite a bit of time left.
If you do jump off, commissioners, or something happens, just join on the calendar on your iPad.
Yeah.
And if you get going, you should be okay to finish the meeting, and then I'll call you when we're done.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll rush along then. We now have item C, which is discussion of the Northwest Public Power Association draft resolutions. And I believe Commissioner Wolf will facilitate this section.
And I think I missed my chance, but I wanted to congratulate Commissioner Logan on being elected to the Board of Directors for Energy Northwest.
Well, so. Thank you. I've always been on the Board of Directors. It's the executive one, which is coming up in April.
Right. Well,
which hasn't happened yet, but thank you.
I was in the meeting, and I'm glad I wanted to say congratulations, Commissioner Logan, but I'm glad I didn't, because when I mentioned it to Allison, she said, oh no, you can't do that. So I'm doing it now. Congratulations. That's a great opportunity for you.
Well, and I certainly hope you can weave through all the politics to get on the executive board.
Yes, that will be very interesting if I can. So, but thank you for your.
Well, happened when you were jumping for joy and giving thumbs up? What was that about? Did you get a nomination?
No, I don't remember. I was named on a committee to recommend the outside directors to Energy Northwest.
Okay. Well, I was interrupted momentarily by a call that came in.
Yeah. So I think that might have been what you've heard. And this is the second time that I've served on that committee.
And so I want to thank Allison for educating me that if you're in a meeting like that, you're not supposed to do a chat. Is that right? Not supposed to enter a chat. Oh, well, I'll try not to do the wrong thing.
Now let's, commissioners, move on to item C, which is a review of the draft resolutions for Northwest Public Power Association. And again, Commissioner Wolf, I believe you will be facilitating this.
Well, okay, so do we have Brenda White on the line, in the meeting? Oh, good.
I'm right here.
I will start by thanking Brenda, and Allison was with us as well as a note taker, I guess. So I want to thank Brenda for working really hard on these with me. And so as we studied all of the resolutions, there was just one that I felt we really needed to consider, on which I felt that we needed to consider some changes. And that is the one. It was Resolution 2021-02. There were a couple of concerns that I had on a couple of the others, but I decided, and I think Brenda agreed with me, that it really wasn't worth our time to go there, because one of them had to do with the Endangered Species Act and looking at financial incomes to utilities. And so, you know, I have a lot of thoughts about that, but I don't think the Endangered Species Act is really going to be changed by at the federal level. So I thought, oh, well, let's just leave it. Let's leave that alone. And the other one had to do with NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act, and some efforts to change NEPA. But that's a huge process to do that, because NEPA is managed by the Council on Environmental Quality under the administration. And they're the ones that, you know, have to be involved. So I thought, okay, let's not bother that one. So the one I'd like to focus on, and I'll try to be really brief and explain why I would suggest these changes. And these changes are based on just knowledge that I have and from my study of science and following environmental issues. And so the first one is the use of the word all in the title, in support of all hydropower as a renewable resource. Now, this is not based as much on science as it is an opinion that I see it as being too broad, because I'm aware that a lot of people do not agree that hydropower should be in certain places. And so I felt that it was overbroad. I'm sure that in the long run, or as they say, at the end of the day, when the whole resolutions committee gets together, that they will want to leave that. But I just want to point out that I feel it's too broad. And so that's that. Now, there were a few little minor editing, you know, commas and capitalizations and things like that, but skipping over those. One other comment on the use of the word all. I feel that it's unnecessary. I think it's sufficient to say in support of hydropower as a renewable resource. But whoever wrote this a couple of years ago, I think, really wanted to say all. And I'm sure that the hydropower lobby would like that too. But I think it's problematical, because you do have a lot of environmentalists who don't agree with that. So, okay. So going on, in a lot of places, there is a reference to hydro as a carbon-free and safe energy resource. I don't know so much about the carbon production, but it is not really carbon-free, because the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has not gotten their permits since 2013 for using petroleum products in the dams, especially the four lower Columbia River dams. And so Columbia River Keeper, the nonprofit organization, sued the Army Corps of Engineers in 2013. And they reached an agreement that for 7 years, that, okay, Army Corps would get their permits as required by the Clean Water Act. And Columbia Riverkeeper would not sue again for 7 years. Okay, so 7 years is up and they still don't have their permits that are required under the Clean Water Act. And they are spilling and leaking petroleum products in those, especially in those lower four dams on the Columbia. So in fact, they're not really carbon free. So my suggestion, but I doubt that the whole resolutions committee would go for it, but my suggestion was instead of saying carbon free, say low carbon, because I don't know how we measure that anyway. But the more important one for me was, the most important one is that they say there are no greenhouse gas emissions. And there have been some recent scientific studies done on how much methane is produced in our part of the world, but also globally by the reservoirs that are behind all these dams. And it's a huge amount of methane. The problem is people will argue, and it is true, that we have methane that's being leaked from buildings, from the tundra that's melting up in the Arctic. You know, we do have a lot of methane. And it's even, I saw the other day, it's even bubbling up from the faults under Puget Sound. Methane is coming up, indicating where those faults are and that they're active. So anyway, there's a lot of methane. But, you know, it's not factually true to say that we have no greenhouse gas emissions, because they're showing that there's more methane coming from reservoirs behind dams than we ever thought. So I just want to mention those. And those are, ladies and gentlemen, all that I have.
And so, Commissioner Wolf, what are you asking from the board?
Well, I just wanted to bring those to your attention, because when we have our meeting, I would like to mention these, and I will provide, you know, the evidence. I do have a copy of the study that was published in May of 2021. By a very, very reputable scientific organization about methane production in reservoirs behind dams. So, I mean, I don't think, I mean, to be realistic, they may not want to make any changes, and so on, that's how it goes. But I think it's important for them to be aware, to be, you know, to be aware of these things. And so, I just think a lot of people don't look very closely at some of these resolutions, and they certainly, well, they may not have, you know, the background to know the difference. So, but about carbon free, I honestly don't know, except that there's carbon in the petroleum products that get leaked into the river and spilled, and the fact that the Army Corps of Engineers still don't have their permits. So there's carbon.
Thank you, Commissioner. I sincerely appreciate your thorough look at this. Commissioner Logan, comments, observations?
You know, I guess my first observation is I think all renewable sources have carbon in them. There's certainly carbon in the construction of dams, the concrete used, and I'm sure there's carbon in the construction of solar panels and installation of those and wind farms and stuff. That's so true. I guess my first question would be, how are the NPPA resolutions characterizing those forms of renewable energy? Do we have resolutions on those, and have we had those in the past?
I don't think we've addressed comparables, like how much carbon is there in wind? There, of course, there's carbon in wind energy and solar, all of these things. But it's still not, I think, okay to say that it's carbon free when there's actually a lawsuit, you know, against the Army Corps of Engineers on the basis of the carbon that they are spilling and leaking into the Columbia River. So I see our attorney Ann Spangler has a question or a comment.
Yes, thank you, Commissioner Wolf. I just thought it'd be helpful to address Commissioner Olson's question and then offer an observation. So with respect to the resolutions, our governance policies provide that if we're going to make changes on behalf of the utility, that the board members need to all speak as one with regard to that. So if these changes are being proposed to be submitted, then I think all three commissioners should be providing a head nod for that. Of course, Commissioner Wolf is free to express a personal opinion that is not on behalf of the board if there is a disagreement. The what second about- observation, Sorry. Yeah, so that's, I think, what's being presented. And the second observation I was going to make is that we have generally been following the regulatory regime when we're referring to hydro as a carbon-free or emissions-free resource. That's the way most of the regulations and laws in the state of Washington treat it. And so I think that's why you see, despite you know, the permits that have been applied for but not yet received, those will probably be processed in due course. And that spectrum of context that you could look at as to whether or not there is methane in the reservoirs on the Columbia River and whether that would be considered, make it a carbon resource or consider a carbon-free resource. So again, we're just sort of following the way most of the agencies view hydropower in calling it a emissions or a carbon-free resource.
It's interesting. I found out that the other PUDs do not require their boards to approve suggestions to the resolutions committee, because that's where there can be conversation and discussion and we can work, you know, as a committee. But before it's the committee then decides, you know, what will go forth.
I can appreciate that, but this is Commissioner Olson, with my background, I do believe you brought this to our attention. So it was my assumption that you were looking for nod of the head before you address this with the Ledge Committee, the NWPPA Ledge Committee. And I thank Ann for her input, because I hadn't thought it through that much, but to me, this is not consistent with the position the utility has taken with in other venue, APPA resolutions, our communications. Is this outside? Would these changes be outside of our communications or positions regionally, nationally? I guess I'm looking to Brenda.
So I appreciate Ann Spangler's comments and also yours, but is it reasonable to expect that someone who serves on a board or a committee or like policymakers council, that they come to the board before they express or have questions or raise issues? Is it really practicable for them to have to come before the board to say, oh, is it okay if I speak about this? Is it okay if I vote on this? So all of that has to come before the board. That's
Well, Commissioner, I guess I didn't read this. I thought that you were bringing it to us, because while it's subtle, I see this as a very distinct change. And that's why I thought you were bringing it to us.
I was told that I had to.
Well, when I was in your position, I certainly always did. I always did. I also, when I was on the APPA Ledge group, I always brought them to the board, particularly and with in concert with our government relations folks. And Brenda's with us this afternoon. And Brenda, I do have a question of you. Have you been involved in terms of the development? I see there are a couple of new resolutions. Have you been involved in all of this all along?
To answer that question, January 20th was the due date for any new resolutions or changes to the prior year resolutions. The district did not engage in that portion of this process. We didn't add any new resolutions. What's before us now is recommended changes to some of the resolutions from last year, as well as these two new ones, but for consideration before the resolutions committee.
And if that makes sense. We didn't add any, but typically I would look to you folks to, including with probably appropriate district staff, to particularly in the area of new resolutions, I would hope that you would have done some auditing or assessment.
That is correct. What we do, the GR role here is to facilitate communications with the commission office, as well as vet each one of those resolutions with subject matter folks. So that has been done. Okay. The bulk of the resolutions this year are carryovers from last year, which we voted in favor of. And there have been very modest, you know, changes there, some grammatical changes, some perhaps just changes within the, you know, the realm of each one of these resolutions that are modest. Then there's the two new resolutions that have been fully vetted also by our folks. So
this Commissioner Wolf's, these are comments that, Commissioner, you haven't yet brought to the Ledge Committee, but they have gone through an initial review.
I mean,
I see some other changes that I'm assuming the Ledge Committee has already made, right?
Well, so last week, Commissioner Wolf and I met just to go over the whole slate of resolutions, one of which does include this hydro piece that is topic for conversation today. If we do have edits, I'll need to submit those edits on behalf of the district by this Thursday. I think that's the critical juncture here, is if we do want to make some changes, it'll be, you know, a decision that it would be helpful to have today so that I can meet Thursday's deadline. And then the resolutions committee meets February 9th. The GRC meets March 9th.
Did we have these, did we propose these changes last year when this resolution was out?
Some of them. We did not.
I think we proposed maybe some of them, but not all of these.
Correct.
I think maybe mostly last year it was just like grammatical things and mm-hmm. and maybe the use of the word all was, maybe we brought that up. But I guess my concern, okay, so it's very informative and interesting and important to know that Commissioner Olson, when you wanted to be involved in discussion on any of those committees that you referred to, you had to come first to the commission and get approval to be able to make those contributions or ask those questions. Or were you able to participate, or how tell me, how did that work?
Well, I'm talking about my term.
Right.
And from the get-go, I always worked, they were always on the calls with me or whatever, with our government relations folks.
Mm-hmm.
And I had thought, given my history on this, that you were bringing this, while everything is still moving, that you, because I see differences, substantial, significant differences in some of the modifications that you are want to propose to the Ledge Committee. So I was pleased that you brought forward to us. And I am just really not comfortable at this point. And I immediately thought, well, is this inconsistent with the PUD's a support of hydropower in on a regional, local, national level. And we are in our publications, do we say all? Do we say carbon free? To me, this kind of a change in one place then would be inconsistent with what we have ID'd in other venues. And I'm struggling with it.
I see your point, and I think those are really good points.
So Commissioner Olson, could I offer another comment? And maybe Commissioner Wolf? I think I would draw a distinction between asking questions and having general discussions and offering a position. And I think part of the reason why this is appropriate to be before you today is because it is offering a position on behalf of the utility and one that does look different substantively from positions we've taken in the past. And substantively, it does look different for the reasons I explained earlier from what we say in most of our other publications. You know, we follow sort of way the regulatory world looks at hydro. And right. So because it's an inconsistency, I think it's appropriate for this to be taken up as a matter, does the whole board want to take this position? And if not, then there's still the individual opinion route for Commissioner Wolf to go.
Well, as a member of the Resolutions Committee, if I can't bring forward things that I know to be factually incorrect, why should I be on, you know, serving or trying to serve or trying to study these? I mean, I don't really particularly want to take them as a final position. I just like to be involved in the discussion of the points and to bring them to the attention of the other members of the Resolutions Committee. And if they don't go along with it, that's okay.
I'm not going to prolong this. I don't want to prolong it, but actually, Ann Spangler does have a point. You are the Snohomish County PUD's representative.
Yes.
Therefore, you are the board's representative. And while I respect and I believe that given your research and your background, that some of your points are very valid. However, this board has not officially made these determinations. So I struggle with supporting these edits during this portion of the process of developing these resolutions. And it's for all the same things that I've already stated. It's inconsistent with all other areas, be it communications, whatever, other organizations. And it's inconsistent. And I struggle with supporting something that.
So may I ask about process? How are we going to be consistent when we participate in other boards or councils or committees? And we're taking, you know, we're not saying this is what everybody on our board says, this is what I'm offering as a member of this committee or this commission or this board or this council.
And you have brought this to us and offered this to us. You are representing me. You are representing SID. You are representing the Snohomish County PUD. And I personally am not in support of moving these proposed changes forward with it at this stage. And I believe, Brenda, you said that there's a deadline for this and then it goes into another iteration. before they're finalized. So I personally am not in support of it. I don't know where Commissioner Logan is. Commissioner Logan?
Yeah, so I think, first of all, I think Commissioner Wolf, you bring up a good question about when we represent our utility on boards. And I think we can represent and we can have conversations in those groups. I think that this is actually adopting a resolution or recommending an edit to a resolution. And I have concerns about these changes, especially since we had the same resolution last year. And now as a utility, we'd be to making these changes. I think your points are valid. Your points are valid. And I'm fine with these small edits, and I'm fine with removing the word all. But the ones about low carbon and emissions, I just think that is taking a new position, and it's not really the regulatory one. But as I said, I certainly, you're right about the science. So I can't support those edits.
You cannot support the changes that are based on reliable science?
What I said.
No, I'm sorry. I may have misunderstood.
I can't support, especially since we had the same resolution last year. I can't support, as a utility, submitting something different this year that's so substantially different and characterizing hydropower differently than we did last year. I am fine with removing the word all. I'm fine with the commas, the capitalizations, but I'm not comfortable with removing the greenhouse gas part and changing the carbon-free status.
Even though you agree with the science justifying those?
Well, I really would like to know more about all the other resolutions that they have done, because like I said, every single form of energy has carbon. There's not almost nothing made by humans that doesn't have carbon. So
Commissioner Logan,
yes.
I don't mean to interrupt you. It looks like Commissioner Olson may have got disconnected. So can we take a quick recess?
Yes. Do you want to call that, Commissioner Wolf? Do you want to call a recess?
Oh, sure. That's fine.
Let's say 5 minutes.
It is 3:17 and we are reconvening. And I apologize for the computer glitch.
Well, we're all back, so.
I just shut me down. I thought maybe, I said earlier that maybe you thought I got mad and went home, took my toys
home. No. Try not to take anything personally.
Oh, no. So where are we on this? Let's do a summary on. I would prefer we not make any of these changes, at least in this stage of the process, including the all on the title, because taking all out to me means you get to pick and choose what hydropower should be labeled renewable. So I do see a distinct difference there too. Okay. So commitment. Yes.
Yeah, this is John. Just a quick comment, and I just really want to pile on to Ann Spangler's comment, and I think she articulated it very well, as did you, Commissioner Olson. But when we refer to carbon free, and we say, now we are 97-98% carbon free, we're really referring to the fuel that is going through the generator. That's the water, no different than the air or the wind that goes through a turbine. And I think I'm okay with a further discussion, but in the context that this resolution is written to change those terms in there puts us in a bad place, and I'd have real concerns about that.
Thank you.
Okay, so excuse me, I've got a lozenge in my mouth, just a second. So at what point would I be able to function as a member of that committee to bring forth any of these, scientifically and legally valid points? And as I said earlier, how does this relate to our functions, the functions of other commissioners in their roles as committee members and that sort of thing? I mean, I do think we're the only PUD that is requiring a member of this committee to come, you know, not to be able to participate in the discussion at this stage of the game. And the fact that it is being brought back from a previous year should not eliminate it from being looked at again. That's the whole point. If something is brought back, that means that others may have had questions about it too. I do accept John's point about the water being renewable. If it's just talking about the energy source itself, it's not the whole process of producing hydropower. It's just the water itself. Is that what you're saying, John?
Yeah, not the ancillary, you know, oils or hydrocarbons that they use in the machinery, things like that. It's just the fuel source for the energy.
Okay, I'll buy that. I'll buy that. So anyway, I guess it doesn't matter about the fact. Well, I do think that we should also be willing to look at things if they haven't been settled and, you know, accepted or adopted in a previous year. Then there might be good reason to bring them back, and maybe on a second look you notice other things. I did not know that the Army Corps of Engineers didn't have their permits for what they do in operating the dams. I mean, it's been over 7 years now. No, 20. Yeah, 7 years. And they're still trying to get their permits, I guess, or I don't know. Anyway, it's a requirement of the Clean Water Act. But if you all don't think that these are important to bring out, then I defer to your majority.
Commissioner, don't go there with majority, please.
Well, I mean, it is. It's true. Two of you don't really think we should bring it forth. And I do, but I accept, you know, my position even as the representative to NWPPA. So that's where we are.
Commissioner Olson, can I just jump in, maybe help clarify a little bit? So the board's policy, Anne was correct, that one commissioner cannot speak on behalf of the board without getting the other two. So this is being brought forward to get the other two commissioners' approval that they're okay with you moving forward with these suggestions. That's part of our board policy. And part of the policy with these resolutions that we've had for a few years now is that government relations reviews them, meets with the commissioner that's the representative, and then all the resolutions are presented to the commissioners, even if there are no changes being suggested. That's been our process. I think what Anne was saying is you, Commissioner Wolf, as one commissioner, you can't be the voice of the whole body. You have to speak on behalf of the three of you, not just yourself. And I think we have something in writing about how this process is to go, that we wrote up a few years ago, and I'll try to find it and get it out to everybody.
Well, I do understand everything you just said, Melissa. I do understand that we speak with one voice, but I did not know that it extended to our participation on committees when we would be just discussing things.
So you're okay to discuss. I want to just clarify, you're okay to have discussions, but you can't go forward with the suggestions that you want on the resolution unless all three of you are in, all three of you agree that those are the changes that the board as a whole would like to have done.
Does that make sense?
If I could add in, Melissa, one more comment.
Sure.
Sorry, this is Anne, one more thing. I'm going back to the board policies. It's, I understand where you're coming from about wanting to have discussions. And I think it's a question of just honoring that line between when you are speaking on behalf of the utility and the board, yes, and being clear if you are expressing a personal point of view that isn't on behalf of the board or the utility. And our governance policies do try to recognize that.
So would it be okay for me to say, I'm not representing our whole board here, but I do know that this, this, and this, and I just offer it as food for discussion, but it's not representing my whole board.
And I think that that's probably legitimate. It's not an action, not a matter on which the board has formally acted. We know that, at least what I have heard, is the other two members are not comfortable representing that this is the position of the utility, but you're expressing a personal point of view on behalf of yourself alone. And it's not contrary to some formal action the board has taken at this point.
Right.
That personal view is a personal view, but it should not be encapsulated into edits to a resolution. That the resolution is representing the PUD's review, acceptance, whatever, of an NWPPA resolution. But I do not read into what Ann said that Commissioner Wolf would represent her position or her views by including these changes in the resolution.
That's correct. I would not assume that Brenda would submit these on behalf
changes
of the utility.
Okay.
Because that would be taking a position for the utility. If there is a discussion at which Commissioner Wolf is present about these resolutions, I would assume that would be the place to express a personal
yes
point of view.
Yeah. Okay.
Commissioner Wolf, if it would be helpful, maybe Ann and I take this off this meeting and maybe have a conversation to kind of help with that, you know.
Well,
understanding.
Melissa, I believe Brenda said, is Brenda with us still? She said that there's a timeline, right? A pretty tight timeline.
Right. What I'm saying is how to help her understand what her role is on the NWPPA committee, resolution committee. I think I'm with Ann. I hear that the commissioners do not want to move forward with the considerable changes. I think that's clear, but I think just helping Commissioner Wolf understand, you know, what she can and can't do when she's being our representative at those meetings. If that will be helpful, I'm happy to do that.
Yep. I don't feel the need for that. I understand everything you've said, you and Spangler. And so it seems to me, based on that it would be legitimate for me to say, my board has not approved this, but I would like to share with you a couple of things. And maybe I won't even deal with the word all, but I do think that they need to know that there is a lot of methane produced. And that does not, this, by the way, I meant to say this at the outset, this is not an anti-hydro. These changes are not anti-hydro. They're just to make people aware of the factual information, the scientific information that is involved with hydro. And that doesn't mean that, I mean, otherwise you're just saying, oh, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
No, I'd like to summarize where I think to propose to my commissioners to summarize this conversation. Commissioner Wolf has every right to in discussion, general discussion, to discuss her findings, express her her position, however, in any document like this, mm-hmm, these changes will not appear in any document that Brenda returns to NWPPA. Because this document is the represents the organization. Am I correct, Brenda?
Yes.
So I'm hope, is that clear, Commissioner Wolf and Commissioner Logan?
Yes.
Commissioner Wolf?
Well, just so that I'm clear, so when we're in the meeting, it would not be, I would never say that these changes have been approved by our board, but that I would like to bring up a couple of things that are based on some information that I have. And I think I could offer those. And if they say, well, forget about it, then, you know, that's okay. But I don't like being prevented from having discussion with the committee on which I serve.
Commissioner, I was not intending to send the message that you cannot voice your personal views, but and you certainly had that, but anything that has to do with representing the board or the utility represent, I guess you can do majority or minority or whatever, but the position of the board. And what I'm hearing this afternoon is Commissioner Logan and I do not support including these edits in the document that Brenda will return to NWPPA. However, Commissioner Wolf has every right to speak to her research and her bring the information to the attention of the committee.
Thank you.
Is that clear?
I think it is, yes.
Yeah, Commissioner. Thank you. And I would just clarify too that it is incumbent on you, Commissioner Wolf, to say this is my personal opinion.
I would definitely.
So I do think that statement's important. Yep.
I would promise you I would say that.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
This is not the position of our whole board.
Yeah, thank you.
I feel, you know, that it's important just to raise the awareness about a couple of these things. And I don't think I will. I think I just marked out the word all. I don't think I would address that at that point based on the clarification that John brought forth. And I'm sorry to take so much time, but sometimes I think it's important to clarify process.
Commissioner Wolf, one idea I would throw out there is maybe it would be worthwhile to take to offer your comments outside of this process to some of your colleagues and or other stakeholders with NWPPA, just to kind of, you know, kind of test your questions and or thoughts and keep it separate from this process, but it would at least allow you to engage in that conversation with others.
That is exactly what I would like to do. And I have the list of all the members. And I did check in with the person who works for the Chelan, the member of the commission, I mean, the resolutions committee. I chatted with the person who does this for Chelan. And she is Mrs. Hydro. So, you know, she gave me huge pushback on everything that I said. And I was perfectly happy with that. You know, sure. Because I don't mind being opposed. I just want to be heard, you know, especially if I have information that I think maybe others don't. Mm-hmm. And if they want to say, oh, heck with you, then that's fine.
I think my previous summary is right on. We're still there, everyone. This document will not be returned with the edits in this round of changes, but Commissioner Wolf has every right to express her personal views, and she will do so by indicating that they're her personal views, not the view of she's not representing the utility with these personal views.
That is perfectly all
okay.
Right. And I will be chatting with some of the other members. Some of them are way out to the east, you know, down in Idaho, Montana, and they're in co-ops and they're not all PUDs, but anyway, and they're not all commissioners. So that'll be interesting. And I would really appreciate that.
Well, I would caution that not be done.
No, it
with
would be
the thought in mind that you would build a coalition.
No, I heard what John said.
Okay.
That, you know, I would have the right to discuss this. And I would definitely not build a coalition. I just want to exchange views with other people. And
okay. Thank you. And thank you for Brenda and Commissioner Wolf for bringing this information to the board. Let's now move on to agenda item 8, governance planning calendar. Commissioners, do we have any changes? I see there's a lot of red.
I don't have any changes.
NWPPA meets in Coeur d'Alene in June, I believe, May or June. And I don't know what COVID's going to be like. And I don't know if it would work out or if they're going to have virtual capabilities. But sure, you know, if it's safe to go, I'd love to go. But I don't want to go if COVID is still raging or some variant of COVID. You know, I think protecting our health is really the most important thing.
I concur with you on that one.
Thank you for your time.
All right. Is there any further business to be brought before the board, John?
I have none. Thank you.
Commissioner Logan? Commissioner Wolf?
I have none.
No, nothing more.
Me neither. Hearing no further business to come before us, it is now 3:36 p.m. and the board will recess into executive session to review the performance of a public employee under the terms set forth in the Open Public Meetings Act. It is anticipated the executive session will last approximately 1 hour. The commission will immediately adjourn the regular meeting upon conclusion of the executive session. And commissioners, before we change platforms, I believe our executive session will be on the Teams platform. But I would propose that we take the first 10 minutes of our executive session to do some planning, and then we'll be joined by the public employee after that. Are you comfortable with that?
Yes.
Could we have just a little space before we have to be, you know, on the screen? Like maybe 5 minutes?
Oh, what about 5 minutes? Is that, okay. Are you comfortable with that, Commissioner Logan?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, which would be what? 4 something. 5 minutes would be?
3.
What time is it?
4:43.
Okay, 4:43. All right, we are signing off.